This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. At $3.1 billion, San Antonio's fiscal year 2022 budget is expected to be the largest in the city's history. About $1.3 billion of that is dedicated to the general fund, which funds the majority of the city operations, including police services. The city budget for the next fiscal year includes a 3.8% increase for the San Antonio Police Department. Well, what went into the budget planning process? How was community input about the police services incorporated? Many people protested and demanded changes to the city's budget after the death of George Floyd. Is this what you were calling for? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. What are your expectations for the city budget and for what's going to be happening with the police department? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You could also tweet at us at TPRSource or email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this hour by Eric Walsh, the San Antonio City Manager. Welcome back to The Source, Eric Walsh.
Thank you, Dave, for having me.
Also with us, Chief William McManus, San Antonio Police Department. It's always great to have you, Chief McManus.
Thank you, sir.
And with us also, BJ Wagner, Senior Fellow of Justice System Policy at the Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute. BJ Wagner, it's great to have you on The Source today.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
City Manager Walsh, there's a lot going on in this budget. We've had a chaotic year, and we can see how there's a response. The budget looks like it's a response document to, and so there's a lot happening here.
It is a lot. You know, there are five main key messages, Dave. One is that certain parts of our business have recovered nicely, and others are still struggling. I think we've taken lessons we've learned from the last 18 months. And tried to make some permanent changes on how we deliver services. I think we're looking at how to respond differently to calls, and part of that relates back to the police review we did. And it's really about also making sure that we're restoring some of the things we've cut over the last 2 years because we had to keep our budget balanced.
Right. There's a finite amount of money.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we've got, you know, our sales tax, the three main areas of our business that have been impacted the last 18 months, sales tax, our hotel occupancy tax, and our airport. And sales tax has rebounded nicely in the spring and over the summer. But in our hotel occupancy tax, you know, our revenue projected for next year is 24% below what our actual was in 2019. So that part of the visitor industry and is still picking up. The airport has done very well in the spring, and we've got flights returning this month, and we're projecting our revenue to be about 2% better than 2019. So really we're watching those different lines of business and monitoring to make sure that we can manage those expenses appropriately.
Chief McManus, defund the police. That was a big thing. People are still calling for that in some areas. We have a law now in Texas saying that cities cannot defund their police. They can't reduce the funding for police. And here in San Antonio, the budget for the police department has been increased 3.8%. But it's more complicated than looking at that specific number. What do you want people to know about how the police department is dealing with changing expectations?
Thanks for that question. We've made a lot of substantial changes over the years, not just in the wake of George Floyd, but going back all the way to, I'll go back all the way to 2007, we started making changes. The first change I'll mention is change to how we handle domestic violence. And we've continued to make those changes through the years, and we have become a very progressive and forward-thinking police department based on all of those changes that we've made.
And so we're adding SAFE officers, San Antonio Fear-Free Environment, that's what SAFE stands for, to the budget?
Yes, sir.
And what will be their, what's going to be in their purview?
Well, SAFE, for those listeners who may not be aware, The SAFE unit handles handles neighborhood issues. They do directed patrol for specific crime patterns. They deal with things that are not necessarily best dealt with by calling 911 or the non-emergency number. They deal with quality of life issues. They deal with disputes with neighbors. They put on different types of programs in neighborhoods. They deal very, very closely with HOAs, homeowners associations, and neighborhood associations. And that's what these 12 new police officers will do. They'll work very closely with neighborhoods, individual citizens in neighborhoods. But it's all, if I had to describe it in one sentence, they deal with quality of life issues in neighborhoods.
VJ Wagner, Senior Fellow of Justice System Policy at the Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute. You're making recommendations to the city of San Antonio to how to deal with mental health calls. And what are your recommendations?
You know, I really appreciate that question because it allows us to really open the discussion into an array of what that recommendation should look like. There really is no simple answer to how to address a mental health emergency because, you know, we've been asking people as a society and as a treatment system, we've been asking people living with mental health care needs to wait for a long time, to wait for a treatment professional to arrive, to wait for a medical professional to arrive, to wait for the right police officer to arrive. And what we recommend is to stop asking people to wait and to develop a system that allows for a multidisciplinary response team to respond to the person who's experiencing a mental health emergency without regard to the acuity level of that mental health emergency, whether that mental health emergency is presenting itself in such a way that causes a public safety concern, whether it has some kind of elements of violence or some kind of elements of aggression to it or not, should not determine whether that person receives a service delivery system or not. It should not determine whether that person receives police services or treatment services. What we recommend is that we develop a multidisciplinary response team that delivers an immediate service to people who have a mental health emergency equitably, without regard to the acuity level of that. So being able to deliver services or, you know, without regard to that person's level of need. So we don't cut off delivery services when they become uncomfortable to deliver.
And so we're going to continue this conversation talking about how San Antonio will be dealing with mental health crisis calls, the role that the San Antonio Police Department will be playing in those calls, and how there will be training, there will be a toolbox of how to de-escalate, how to keep these calls from going violent. But what happens when they do? Will the people who are there, will they be ready to adapt and proceed and protect public safety? And we are talking about overall public safety as well. That's the general job for the San Antonio Police Department. How do we make sure we're going to make sure that they have everything they need to do that? If you have a question, call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the proposed city budget for San Antonio. It will be going to the City Council on September 16th for approval in that city budget. We can see what's been the framework for the San Antonio Police Department, among other items that we should be talking about as well. But there's a lot of concern about how we can have a public health approach to policing when that is needed, and if we are going to supply our police department with everything that they need to do that. And if you have a question or a comment, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-877-8255. TPR talk. Chief McManus, there are some people who still advocate saying that there is no role for the police department in coming to a mental health crisis call. Can you tell me what's your response to that opinion?
Sure. I would argue that these calls are and can be very, very volatile. You're dealing with individuals who are oftentimes unstable because they're in crisis. And I would hate to see someone, such as a clinician or some other type of person who would be involved in that call, be injured because a police officer wasn't present. I don't necessarily think that in all of these calls we play a primary role, but certainly I believe that we should be there to cover and protect those who are primary on the call.
And Chief McManus, so when the officer is there on the call, what is their posture? What is their stance? How are they, like, are they in uniform?
They could be in uniform or they couldn't be. They don't need this, excuse me. They don't necessarily need to be in uniform. I think that that's something that we would talk about. And right now, actually, our mental health officers are not in uniform. So, I mean, it could go either way.
And this is a way to try to keep a situation from escalating. A person might see a uniformed officer and not be willing to engage with the public health professional.
I think that I think the primary role of police officers at these scenes is to protect people from being injured. And in this new model that we're going to, this multidisciplinary response team, there is a possibility in every single call that someone could get hurt. Our role is to prevent that from happening.
Do you want to add to that, BJ Wagner?
Sure. And you know, we get it. We share the concerns with advocates. I mean, we can't continue to act as if there has not been a tragic intersection around mental illness, race, and policing, because, you know, we have seen that. There has been many people each year who lose their lives in police contacts, and that includes people living with mental illness. So, you know, we agree that there is a role for alternative response models that don't include police officers. And if you see our report with the City of San Antonio, you'll see that we examine that, you know, really closely. So while we agree that there needs to be an appropriate alternative response model, you know, we also agree with what the chief is saying. It is critically important that we remember that there are mental health emergencies where a risk of violence exists. And we can't ignore that. We can't ignore that public safety lane, that second lane of response, if you will, where there is a risk of violence. Because doing so actually withholds an alternative response from people living with mental health care needs who pose a risk of violence when they are in an emergency situation. So by establishing a law enforcement involved alternative response model, establishing a multidisciplinary response model actually allows a community or allows a city such as San Antonio to be inclusive for its mental health community, to be inclusive in its alternative response models, to ensure that everybody living with mental health care needs has the ability to have an alternative response model, something other than a traditional law enforcement response, without regard to the acuity level of their mental health emergency. Because we can't act as if every mental health emergency is benign and safe for a civilian-only response team. Doing so, as I said, withholds an alternative response model for those in your community who do have a public safety risk when they are in a mental health emergency.
Let's go to the phone lines. The number is 833-877-8255. We're talking about the new city budget and proposed and its impact on police services when we have a public health approach to policing. Let's go to Rachel. Rachel, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Thank you so much for addressing these. And Chief McManus, I want to let you know that SAFE officers have been essential to our neighborhood. I live in Highland Park, and as the COPS coordinator, I have known all of our SAFE officers. It seems they're constantly being promoted to detective, and even when we have one assigned to our area, so often they're pulled away to do patrol and all these other duties sometimes. In the East Substation, there's supposed to be 6 SAFE officers, and there's actually only 2 that are designated, and they're trying so hard to cover everything. I'm wondering, is this new budget actually going to allow the SAFE officers to do their work? Thank you.
All right, and Chief McManus.
The answer to that question is that we try to our best not to pull SAFE officers from their regular assignments, but on occasion that happens. SAFE officers will always, not always, but SAFE officers will sometimes promote. So they'll sometimes want to move on to another assignment, and you know, we're not going to stop them from doing that. But we do try to leave them within their assignments and not pull them off to other things, simply because we know that that's a concern of the neighborhoods.
And to Eric Walsh, San Antonio City Manager, I want to ask you about something else in the budget that caught my eye, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Office. How is that a new development?
Well, David, we have an Office of Equity that really focused over the last 3 years on racial equity issues, both internally within the organization and in the community. But one of the things that I think we need to do a better job at going forward is gender diversity, inclusion and public access, language access with our services to the public. You know, what I'd like to be able to do is really examine from a community perspective. I mean, we know intuitively we translate things into Spanish, but are there other languages and other avenues that we should be incorporating into our protocols with the public, and not just assume it's just Spanish? So we're going to take a kind of a harder look to coordinate both the equity from a racial standpoint, gender diversity, inclusion for all. We've consolidated our American with Disabilities Act people into this unit. And I'm hoping that it acts as a larger cornerstone for the organization and the community. And we just, all those things existed, but they were spread out throughout our large organization. You know, David, I'd like to talk about police for a second. You didn't ask me to pipe in, but I think it's important to put some context in the review we did this year. We went through 27 community meetings in addition to the work that BJ and Meadows did on looking at mental health calls. We worked with UTSA to really examine all of our 911 calls. One of the central questions we went to the public with was, what are your expectations of the police department? And we also talked to officers, because when you look at our 911 calls, the vast majority of them are not, you know, lights and sirens emergencies, and a fair amount of them may not require a police officer at all. So part of the budget plan is to move calls to other police, to other city departments, like loud music, animal related calls, fireworks calls. That, you know, one of the things we heard from the public in these 27 meetings was that they want more time to engage with the police officers. So if we can keep officers away from calls they don't need to be at, encounters that they don't need to be on, handled some other way with another city department, and the proposed budget, and you mentioned it, beefs up our SAFE officer count by 12. We want to improve that level of engagement community wide. And I, you know, part of this, David, is not just the 2022 budget. It's about how we position the police department, which is our largest department, where we spend the most amount of money, where we have the most number of employees. It's one of the reasons why, from a negotiation standpoint and collective bargaining, we're trying to make sure that we make changes from an accountability standpoint and a discipline standpoint, because my goal is to have the best police department in the country. And that may mean we have to do things differently, like BJ's recommending, with a multidisciplinary approach. The largest increase we have in the budget, proposed budget, in terms of personnel, is beefing up our domestic violence advocacy program in Metro Health. And all those things tie so well together from a necessity standpoint with the police department and the services people expect.
Let me ask you about using code compliance to deal with loud noise complaints. Loud noise complaints usually come at night, late at night, loud music, parties, a lot of hoo-ha. So and code compliance, are they on 24/7?
We're adding resources in the proposed budget to have code officers on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings. We're going to do that for the next several months. And the idea is that the code, the police department writes very few citations for noise violations, but the code officers will respond. They'll take the measurement. And if they need a police officer, then they'll ask for a police officer. Rather than having our patrol officers go from call to call on Thursday and Friday nights, we're going to try to move that off the code. Animal-related calls, we're adding resources to animal care services so that we have officers available at night and overnight to be able to respond to those calls. If it's a vicious animal or a vicious dog call, then they're going to call police as backup. But we're taking police out of the primary responding role on a number of these calls, so that we're keeping them in service, and they're more proactive.
Chief McManus, it does seem like the streets are not getting more peaceful. It seems like just the opposite is happening. And now we're a week into having permitless carry of handguns. I don't know if you've seen any changes on the streets since that's gone into effect, but it can't be helping. We need to be thinking about police department dealing with the crime, and that's still the number one role that you have, isn't it?
It is, and to the city manager's point, I think that the survey that was done this past year actually identified very nicely those types of calls that we really don't need or shouldn't necessarily be responding to, and with code compliance and animal care services picking up some of those calls and the fire department picking up some of those calls, I think that's right on the money.
But every call is an opportunity to engage the public. Doesn't always have to be the worst day of their life. Is that ideal?
Every call is an opportunity to engage the public, but I don't necessarily think that police officers should be put in the position of engaging the public in a situation where they're going to walk away from that situation having it been a lose-lose or a lose-win type situation. And what I mean by that is, suppose an officer gets a call for a loud music complaint, and the person who is the responsible for that loud noise is not going to necessarily be happy with the police when they leave if they're told to turn the music down. So that's not necessarily the type of community engagement that we want to involve ourselves in if we don't have to. If someone else can handle those calls more appropriately, I think that that's who should handle it.
All right. We're going to be taking a break, and we'll come right back. We'll continue our discussion. We'll get to our calls that we have on the board. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about the police services under the new fiscal budget for fiscal year 2022. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Of course, on Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the new city budget. It's going to City Council on September 16th. We're talking mainly about the police services and how things are adapting to changing expectations from the public. We invite your comments and questions, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We do have the city manager with us, Eric Walsh, the chief of police, William McManus, and also BJ Wagner. She is a senior fellow Fellow of Justice System Policy at the Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute, and she's been making recommendations to the city for a combined approach to mental health calls. Let's go to the phones. We have Michelle. And Michelle, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm wondering, as public school administrators, counselors, and police officers, we make home visit calls when there's a mental health concern of our students. And I'm wondering, do we have access to the SAFE trained officers? Are we able to provide them as a resource to families in need, or are they dispatched when you see that the need arises?
All right. Thank you for that call, Michelle. So Chief McManus?
SAFE officers are not necessarily, thank you for that question. SAFE officers are not necessarily dispatched. They are involved in chronic neighborhood issues, and basically their role is they handle pretty much anything that comes up in a neighborhood or a community where they can be of assistance, and that could certainly be providing mentorship or guidance to students at schools, or if a parent is having issues with a child at home, the SAFE officers are not reluctant to get involved in that. So they're pretty much across the board, will do anything that they deem as beneficial to the community.
PJ Wagner, you work with a lot of cities on these issues, and school districts, they frequently have their own police departments. Are they trained to provide these types of support services?
You know, all police officers in the state have to receive the same types of training, including the school resource officers. So they receive the same crisis intervention training. And what we've seen with school police departments across our state is a lot of innovation in working with their school-based counselors and other resources available to school districts, especially as they've been developing crisis response teams. The Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute works closely with the Texas Educational Agency to provide resources and support to school districts, and especially school resource officers and departments, to ensure that, you know, they are developing mental health emergency and crisis response systems. And I think that many Texas independent school district departments have been serving as a model to other departments across our country in how to develop novel systems.
Another caller. We have John on the phones. John, you're on the air.
Thanks for your time. My comment is about how San Antonio Police Department, from my experience, has reacted to a lot of the situations that the city has come under. Specifically, the freeze that we had in February, the city's emergency department did not do its job, and SAPD and San Antonio Fire Department picked up the slack there. So my question and my comment is to Mr. Walsh, is what has he done to make sure that the city emergency department is properly trained and can actually react to another situation like the February freeze and not leave it to SAPD or the fire department? Because that's not their job. That's not what they get paid to do. They did it because they had to. Thank you.
All right, John. And so Eric Walsh, city manager.
Yeah, great question. It is their job. And our emergency operations center is a part of our fire department. And I think police officers and firefighters and public works and traffic folks did their job. It was a difficult time. I think we've learned a lot of lessons, and certainly we need to do better in our coordination with the municipal utilities, CPS and SAWS. Part of what we're doing in the budget is making sure that we've got additional capital resources to ensure our critical facilities are powered. And the other thing we're going to try to do this year, that we'd like to do this year, is create 4 resiliency hubs around the city, a location where we know there's power, whether there's, you know, there's a need in the middle of summer or in the dead of winter, where we can send people. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a city building. We might be working with some area school districts to make sure that we're doing the work at that facility to provide electricity. But I'm sorry, I disagree with the caller. Our police officers and firefighters did what they needed to do, and we're all part of the same team.
So, City Manager Walsh, I mean, I wonder about, we didn't know the freeze was going to be that bad. We knew it was going to be bad. But is it possible to do something like take a via buses and position them before the streets ice over and use those as warming centers? Because people were freezing in their homes.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of it, going into that weekend, I mean, the city had three primary concerns. One, the roads. Two, the highway systems. And three, the unsheltered homeless. And we wanted, and we started working on Thursday before the Monday storm with partner agencies to get people off the streets, into shelter. You know, if you'll recall, there was a really bad accident up in the Fort Worth area on the highway. So it was a critical issue for us and the police department and the fire department and TxDOT to make sure we were monitoring those roads. Putting parking via buses around may be a better idea, but I think what's probably more permanent is being able to have a place where we know we can send people. In the case of February, we sent them to the convention center because I knew there was power and I knew there was water. Many of our facilities were the same victims of that we all experienced personally. And I think though having those resiliency hubs will give us a little bit more latitude to provide an outlet for folks that need to stay warm. I'm not sure that buses on corners is a good long-term suggestion, especially when we're in a 4-day below freezing event.
And so this is a pilot program that is being tried out. When do we expect it, City Manager Eric Walsh, for the pilot program to be up and running? When are the check-ins to make sure that this is doing what your expectations are?
On the resiliency hubs?
Yes.
Oh, we're going to get started immediately. I mean, we're already looking to identify those facilities. The council will adopt that budget on September 16th, but we're not necessarily waiting for October 1st. We need to get moving on that.
And Chief McManus, is there a process in getting the citizens more aware of, well, now the police are not going to respond to certain calls? This is going to be handed off to people who are better adapted.
Well, I think that will certainly play a role in that, but I think that the city's public information office will take the lead on that role. But yeah, I mean, that information will be put out there as soon as it's finalized and, you know, as soon as we figure out exactly what it's going to look like.
And BJ Wagner, you've been consulting with other cities. What are your expectations for San Antonio? Does San Antonio have specific challenges that other locations don't have?
You know, I don't think that they have specific challenges that many other large cities across Texas and across the country are not necessarily facing. You know, San Antonio faces many of the same challenges that you might see in, say, Dallas or El Paso or other large cities in which you have a growing population. You have difficult transportation pathways, you know, with traffic congestion and what have you. And you have stretched resources. But the population remains the same. You know, have a population that has complex needs, that has dynamic medical and mental health care needs. And you have a fragmented service delivery system. But San Antonio also has a really good delivery base. You have service connections that have been working together for a really long time, and you have committed leadership that wants to ensure that everybody living with a mental health care need, not just those that are easy to serve, but everybody living with a mental health care need can have immediate and effective access to care when and where they need it. That is what's unusual. Usually when we go in to work with communities, we have to spend a lot of time really getting everybody to the same level of commitment. And in San Antonio, we see a tremendous amount of commitment to ensuring that everybody with a need in your community that has that need met.
So Eric Walsh, I got to let you guys go, but I want to ask you before we do that about the union negotiations with the San Antonio Police Officers Association. I mean, we can add more bodies to the police department all the time and come up with new documents, but if we don't have oversight and if if Chief McManus can't have the discipline that he wants because of the union, what does that get us?
Well, we need to stay the course. I mean, we've been very targeted and precise on this for over the last year, and it's no surprise. We are looking to restructure and rebalance the disciplinary system to do exactly what you just said. I mean, the public expects officers to behave and not do inappropriate things. I expected a city manager, the chief expects it, and I'd go so far as to say that 99% of our police department expects it. So we're still pressing on those issues. In fact, we've got a negotiation session that's going on right now. And we need to stay the course because this is too important for all of us.
All right. I've got to thank you, Eric Walls, San Antonio City Manager, for joining us this afternoon. Police Chief William McManus, BJ Wagner with the Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute. When we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by San Antonio City Council Member from District 2, Jalen McKee Rodriguez, to get his input on the budget for the San Antonio City and for police services. If you have a question for Council Member McKee Rodriguez, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're discussing the fiscal year budget for 2022, the City of San Antonio and Police Services. We're now joined by City Council Member for District 2, Jalen McKee Rodriguez. And Council Member McKee Rodriguez, welcome back to The Source.
Hey, how's it going? So excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you want to join the conversation, you have a question or a comment for our city council member, a comment on what's happening with the budget with police services. And so, Council Member McKee Rodriguez, if you could tell me, what was your big input? What were you trying to push or nudge where the budget was going, and did you get there?
So really what I would like to see us do is, I think it's no secret that public safety makes up the bulk of our budget. It makes up about 65%, and police makes up about 39% of our budget at about $501 million. And I think we have this habit in not just San Antonio, but in a number of cities to police away our issues. And what we see when we do that is we see the problem increase. We're not fighting to address the root causes of crime or to reduce the sense of hopelessness or to reduce poverty or to increase opportunity. And so where I would like to see us spend our dollars is more in that direction. We can't continue to police away the issues.
Right. So the idea that crime is not the sole responsibility of the police departments and that it is a product of a multi-generational social injustice. That's something that we've been talking about for a while. It's just, how do we make sure we still have adequate public safety? People are still dealing with crime in their neighborhoods and in their homes and then deal with these issues of injustice.
Definitely. And I think we need to take a more community grounded approach in doing so. Right. Here's what I hear a lot is that, the population has grown. It's grown by 12%. Then so the police budget will grow, but it's grown by 19%. And crime has grown by 30%. And so there is a problem there that is not being solved by simply policing. And so one of the things that I propose is an Office of Crime and Recidivism Prevention, which would look at our budget and look at policy and work with all of our city departments to say, hey, how can we prevent crime before it happens? So that means working with housing to increase access to affordable housing. That means working with infrastructure to ensure that maybe our streets are more well lit. That means working with, neighborhood and housing services to see what kind of services can be done for our community so that we can take a more community-driven approach to policing, or even working with arts and culture to deal with some of the graffiti that's going on and figuring out how can we get our youth engaged in that way rather than resorting to some of the negative outlets that happen.
And these are upstream drivers of crime that you may not see the positive results from that for years.
Absolutely. And I think that, I do challenge that. I think you can see results fairly quickly. When the pandemic happened, we saw an uptick in crime quickly. I think we may see crime stabilize and lower if we increase access to opportunities a bit faster. But if we continue to, you know, underinvest in our communities and overinvest in policing, we're not going to see that. We're not going to see a decrease.
All right. So that's an attitude change that we need to have, that we can see immediate positive results if we put our attentions in the right places. Let's go to Charles on the phones. Charles, welcome to The Source. I just lost Charles. When you say that, are you a lone voice on a city council with these ideas, or is that something that other council members, you're building a coalition who will make changes with the city council with the budget?
I'm doing my best. I really don't feel alone in it. I do think there's a lot more. And if over the past few years I've been working on the budget, there are a number of people who do want to see us starting to implement case manager type systems in a number of departments, including code and in animal care. There's people who want to see us prevent crime. And I think really what the struggle is how do we do that? How do we get to that point? And if we all want to prevent crime, what's the route we're going to take to get there? So that's been the argument, but I think we are all on the same page.
And in District 2, what are your constituents telling you? District 2 is, people don't understand how big District 2 is. It's massive.
District 2 is huge. And, we actually, so in July, when we got the results of the budget survey, District 2 ranked a number of things very high. They ranked infrastructure very high. They ranked affordable housing, senior services. But they ranked public safety 8th. And I think people have this perception that District 2 is this super unsafe place or that our community thinks we need more police, when really that's a bunch of other people telling us that that's what's going to solve our problem. We know what our problems are, and that's in those things like infrastructure, in the access to, I'm going to keep saying it, there's an opportunity gap. And we have to leave our district to do anything to spend our money, to get access to amenities, to have fun. And so we have kids who can't travel and do those things. And so they resort to more negative uses of their time. And I think at the District 2 budget town hall, there were a number of people who agreed with me that we don't want to see an increase to the police budget, but we do want to see an increase in investment in our community.
And so a public health approach to policing, and when we say public health, we're also talking about mental health. And that is something that you think that not just for District 2, but for citywide, that we need to implement that.
Absolutely. And there is actually, so I am, I w- prior to, you know, I'm actually, I'm very supportive of the model that we're about to implement. What I would like to see, however, is sort of a shift towards CAHOOTS, which is a model that is used in Eugene, Oregon, and in Denver, Colorado, and other areas as a mental health response. So what they implement is a peer who is a part of the team. So someone who themselves has overcome mental health crises and will be there to support. And what we see is less officers. So currently it's planned that as a part of this program, officers will respond to every mental health call with a team. I don't think they necessarily need to be there. And I think some of the data shows that about 1% of the calls in Eugene, Oregon even require an officer. So I think that this is a shift in that direction away from the over-policing of mental health and the over-policing of homelessness and the over-policing of substance abuse and of coping.
Okay, so that diverges from what we just heard from Police Chief McManus in saying that, some of these calls can go violent And you can have these officers show up. They can be in plain clothes. They can be trained in de-escalation, but that doesn't matter. Sometimes things do go awry, and you have to be ready for that.
Sometimes they do, and I think that's when you create. So I think there needs to be very clear guidelines on what counts as a threat. What instances will it be necessary to have an officer? Because sometimes people don't need that, and the presence of an officer, especially in uniform, or some weapon being visible, that also can trigger people and make, you know, escalate the situation further. And I think what we've seen is there are plentiful examples of officers escalating beyond the need because they didn't know how to handle someone who was going through a mental health crisis. And so I think that's something that can't be negated.
So when this goes to the City Council on September 16th, is this the budget that you want to vote affirmative on?
Not quite yet.
Okay. What would you have liked to see changed?
There's going to be a number of things that I. So one is going to be the Office of Crime and Recidivism Prevention. I would still like to see a civil rights coordinator position added. And what this person would do is they would handle instances of discrimination, the non-discrimination ordinance complaints, because currently my office is getting a lot of those, especially as it relates to housing and, the evictions that are taking place or people denying.
Did you think the diversity, equity, and inclusion office would be helped with that?
No. So currently the Office of Equity would move into that, right? Equity has been handling these. But they're not equipped with a civil rights coordinator nor a legal team that can work with on these. So really, these are falling to the wayside. And they actually made that clear to me and asked for a civil rights coordinator. And currently that position would fall on the city attorney, Andy Segovia, but he has plenty on his plate. And so I don't think that's really appropriate a job for him. But this person would report to his office.
So there are going to be additional SAFE officers, San Antonio Fear-Free Environment officers. Well, do you expect them to be assigned to District 2?
I expect that if the SAFE officer allocations are approved, then they will be evenly distributed to all the substations.
Including District 2?
Including District 2.
And what do you want them to, what should be top of their mind when their first day they show up in District 2? What do you want them to think about?
That they're there to do a job. They're there to get to know the community. There's instances where people are mistaken for suspects just because of what they look like, and that does not fly in District 2. If you're a safe officer and you're assigned to a community, you should know who lives there. And so I think that's something that needs to be top of mind.
Jalen McKee Rodriguez is the San Antonio City Council representative for District 2. It was great talking with you.
You as well. Thank you so much.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chen. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.